The Phoenix Theatre and Arts Company's audio drama series presents J.M. Barrie's Peter Pan, adapted and directed by Gina Stanton. For past episodes, upcoming events, and other information, make sure to visit our website at phoenixtheaterartsco.com. That's theater with an R-E. Without further ado, we give you Peter Pan, Part 1.
Part 1. All children, except one, grow up. That was the way it was for everyone in the world. And that was the way it was for the Darling family, who lived in London. Mrs. Darling was a lovely lady with a romantic mind, and she married Mr. Darling, who was awfully fond of boasting.
Mother not only loves me, but she respects me.
Mr. Darling was one of those deep fellows who knew all about stocks and shares. Of course, no one really knows, but he quite seemed to know, and he often said stocks were up and shares were down in a way that would have made any woman respect him. And after they were wed, along came the Darling children. First was Wendy, then John, then Michael. Now, Mrs. Darling loved to have everything just so, and Mr. Darling had a passion for being exactly like his neighbors, so, of course, they had a nurse. As they were poor, owing largely to the amount of milk the children drank, this nurse was a prim Newfoundland dog called Nana, who had belonged to no one in particular until the Darlings engaged her. She proved to be quite a treasure of a nurse. How thorough she was at bath time, and she was up at any moment of the night if one of her charges made even the slightest cry. No nursery could possibly have been conducted more correctly. And Mr. Darling knew it, yet he sometimes wondered uneasily whether the neighbors talked. Nana also troubled him in another way. He sometimes had a feeling that she did not quite admire him.
I know she admires you tremendously, George,
Mrs. Darling would assure him, and then she would whisper to the children.
Be especially nice to Father.
One night, all of the children were in bed. It happened to be Nana's evening off, and Mrs. Darling had bathed them and sung to them till one by one they had let go her hand and slid away into the land of sleep. While she slept, she dreamed, and while she was dreaming, the window of the nursery blew open, and a boy did drop on the floor. He was accompanied by a small, strange light which darted about the room like a living thing. I think it must have been this light that wakened Mrs. Darling. Oh, how Mrs. Darling screamed at the sight! And then Nana entered, growling, and she sprang at the boy, who leapt lightly through the window. Again, Mrs. Darling screamed, this time in distress, for she thought he was killed. She looked for him, down on the street and up in the sky, but she did not see him. She returned to the nursery and found Nana with something in her mouth. It was the boy's shadow. You see, as he darted through the window, the dog had missed the boy but caught his shadow in her teeth. Mrs. Darling examined it carefully, then rolled it up and placed it in a drawer. Later that week, Wendy, John, and Michael were in the nursery as Mr. and Mrs. Darling prepared for an evening out. Mrs. Darling entered the room, dressed in a beautiful evening gown, and then, moments later, Mr. Darling came rushing into the nursery with a crumpled tie in his hand.
What is the matter, Father dear?
Matter? The matter?
He yelled. He really yelled.
Oh, this tie, it will not tie.
As he continued to speak, he became dangerously sarcastic.
Not round my neck. Round the bedpost. Oh, yes. 20 times have I made it up round the bedpost. But round my neck? No. Oh, dear, no.
He thought Mrs. Darling was not sufficiently impressed, so he went on sternly.
I warn you of this, Mother, that unless this tie is round my neck, we don't go out to dinner tonight. And if I don't go out to dinner tonight, I will never go to the office again. And if I don't go to the office again, you and I starve, and our children will be flung into the streets.
Even then, Mrs. Darling was placid.
Let me try, dear.
she said, and indeed she easily tied his tie for him, and for a moment all were happy and calm. This happy romp ended with the appearance of Nana, and most unluckily Mr. Darling collided against her, covering his trousers with hairs. They were not only new trousers, but they were the first he had ever had with braid on them, and he had to bite his lip to prevent the tears coming. Of course, Mrs. Darling brushed him, but he began to talk again about it being a mistake to have a dog for a nurse.
George, dear, Aunt Nana is a treasure.
No doubt, but I have an uneasy feeling at times that she looks upon the children as puppies. But the way that you all coddle her... Nobody coddles me. Oh dear, no. I am only the breadwinner. Why should I be coddled? Why?
George, not so loud. The whole neighborhood will hear you.
Let them,
he answered recklessly.
Bring in the whole world. But I refuse to allow that dog to lord around in my nursery for an hour longer.
The children wept, and Nana ran to him beseeching, but he waved her back. He felt like a strong man again.
In vain, Nana. The proper place for you is the yard, and there you go to be tied up this instant.
And while the family all pleaded with him, alas, he would not listen. He was determined to show who was the master in that house. And when his commands would not draw Nana out from the kennel, he lured her out of it with honeyed words, and then seized her roughly and dragged her from the nursery. He was somewhat ashamed of himself, and yet he did it. It was all owing to his too affectionate nature, which craved for admiration. When he had tied her up in the backyard, the wretched father went and sat in the passage with his knuckles to his eyes. In the meantime, Mrs. Darling had put the children to bed in unwonted silence and lit their nightlights. They could hear Nana barking, and John whimpered.
Is it because he is chaining her up in the yard?
That is not Nana's unhappy bark. That is her bark when she smells danger,
said Wendy bravely. Michael, already half asleep, asked,
Can anything harm us, Mother, after the night lights are lit?
Nothing, precious. They are the eyes the Mother leaves behind her to guard her children.
She went from bed to bed, kissing their cheeks, and little Michael flung his arms around her, crying out,
Mother, I'm so glad of you.
They were the last words she would hear from him for a long time. If she had known, she likely would not have left that night. But instead, Mother and Father Darling went out in all of their finery. The children slumbered peacefully in their beds, not noticing the small light that zoomed into the room and flickered about. It rummaged through the wardrobe, turning every pocket inside out, and poked through each drawer, and then suddenly the window was blown open and Peter Pan dropped into the room.
Tinkerbell,
he called softly, not wanting to wake the children.
Tink, where are you?
She was in a jug for the moment and was liking it extremely. She had never been in a jug before.
Oh, do come out of that jug and tell me, where did they put my shadow?
The loveliest tinkle of golden bells answered him. It's the fairy language. For you see, the little light that danced around the room was actually a fairy called Tinkerbell. If you could speak the fairy language, as Peter could, you would have heard her say that the boy's missing shadow was in the chest of drawers. In an instant, Peter was rifling through the chest, and then he had recovered his shadow, and in his sheer and utter delight, he forgot that he had shut Tinkerbell up in the drawer. If he had thought at all, although I don't believe that Peter Pan had ever really thought, he would have thought that he and his shadow would immediately join together. When they did not, he was appalled. He tried to stick it on with soap from the bathroom, but that also failed. A shudder passed through Peter, and he sat on the floor and cried. His sobs woke Wendy, and she sat up in bed.
Boy, why are you crying?
Peter could be exceedingly polite, having learned the grand manner at fairy ceremonies, and he rose and bowed to her beautifully.
What's your name?
Wendy Moira Angela Darling. What's yours?
Peter Pan.
Where do you live?
Second star to the right, and then straight on till morning.
Wendy gave a little laugh.
What a funny address.
No, it isn't.
I mean, is that what they put on the letters?
Don't get any letters.
He said with an offhand shrug.
Your mother gets letters.
Don't have a mother.
Peter replied. Not only had he no mother, but he had not the slightest desire to have one. Truth be told, he thought them very overrated persons. Wendy, however, felt at once that she was in the presence of a tragedy.
Oh, Peter, no wonder you were crying.
I wasn't crying about mothers,
he said rather indignantly.
I was crying because I couldn't get my shadow to stick back on. Besides, I wasn't crying.
He sniffled and wiped his nose on his arm.
It has come off. How awful.
She could not help smiling when she saw that he had been trying to stick it on with soap. How exactly like a boy. Fortunately, she knew at once what to do.
It must be sewn on,
she said, just a little patronizingly, exulting his ignorance.
I shall sew it on for you, my little man,
she said, though he was tall as herself, and she got out her housewife and began to sew the shadow onto Peter's foot. She warned him.
I dare say it will hurt a little.
Oh, I shan't cry,
said Peter, who was already of the opinion that he had never cried in his life. He clenched his teeth and did not cry, and soon his shadow was behaving properly, though still a little creased.
Perhaps I should have ironed it.
But Peter was indifferent to appearances, and he was now jumping about in the wildest glee. Alas, he had already forgotten that he owed his bliss to Wendy. He thought he had attached the shadow himself. He crowed rapturously.
How clever I am! Oh, the cleverness of me!
Wendy was shocked and exclaimed with a frightful sarcasm.
Well, of course, I did nothing.
You did a little,
Peter said carelessly and continued to dance.
A little? Well, if I am of no use, then I shall go back to bed.
And the girl flounced back into her bed in a most dignified manner and covered her face with the blankets. To induce her to look up, he pretended to be going away. When this failed, he sat on the end of the bed and spoke cajolingly.
I can't help crowing, Wendy, when I'm pleased with myself.
Still, she would not look up, though she was listening eagerly.
Wendy? Wendy! I tell you that one girl is more than 20 boys!
At this pronouncement, she peeped out of the bedding.
Do you really think so, Peter?
Yes, I do.
I think it's perfectly sweet of you. I'll get up again.
And so, she crawled out from her covers and sat with him on the side of the bed.
I will give you a kiss, Peter, if you like.
Peter did not know what she meant, and he held out his hand expectantly.
Surely you know what a kiss is.
I shall know when you give it to me,
he said unconcerned. And so she gave him a thimble.
Now, shall I give you a kiss?
She inclined her face toward him, but he merely dropped an acorn button into her hand.
Thank you, Peter. I will wear it on a chain round my neck.
It was lucky that she did put it on a chain, for it was afterwards to save her life. The two children talked as children do, and eventually, Peter told her,
Wendy, I ran away the day I was born.
Wendy was quite surprised, but interested, and she intimated that he should tell her more. Peter explained in a low voice.
It was because I heard father and mother talking about what I was to be when I became a man.
He became extraordinarily agitated and spoke with a fierce passion.
I don't ever want to be a man. I always want to be a little boy and to have fun. So I ran away to Kensington Gardens and lived a long, long time among the fairies.
She gave him a look of the most intense admiration, and he thought it was because he had run away, but it was really because he knew fairies. Wendy had lived such a home life. To know fairies struck her as quite delightful. She poured out questions about them, to his surprise, for they were rather a nuisance to him, getting in his way and so on. Still, he liked them well enough on the whole, and he told her about the beginning of fairies.
You see, Wendy, when the first baby laughed for the first time, its laugh broke into 1,000 pieces and they all went skipping about. And that was the beginning of fairies. And so, there ought to be one fairy for every boy and girl.
Ought to be? Isn't there?
No. You see, children know such a lot now, and they soon don't believe in fairies. And every time a child says, I don't believe in fairies, there's a fairy somewhere that falls down dead.
Really, he thought that they had now talked quite enough about fairies, and it struck him that Tinkerbell was keeping very quiet.
I can't think of where she's gone to. Tink, where are you? Tink?
You don't mean to tell me that there is a fairy in this room?
She was just here now. You don't hear her, do you?
The only sound I hear is like a tinkle of bells.
Well, that's Tink. That's the fairy language. I think I hear her, too.
The sound came from the chest of drawers, and Peter made a face.
Wendy, I do believe I shut her in the drawer!
He let poor Tink out, and she flew about the nursery screaming with fury.
Oh, you shouldn't say such things! Of course I'm very sorry, but how could I have known you in the drawer?
Oh, Peter, she is so lovely.
Tink, this lady says she wishes you were her fairy.
Tinkerbell answered insolently.
What does she say, Peter?
He had to translate.
She's not very polite. She says you're a great ugly girl and that she's my fairy.
He tried to argue with the fairy, saying,
You know you can't be my fairy, Tink, because I'm a gentleman and you're a lady.
To this, Tink replied in words so rude that Peter refused to translate them for Wendy and disappeared into the bathroom. Peter spoke apologetically to Wendy.
She's quite a common fairy. She's called Tinkerbell because she mends the pots and kettles.
They were together in the armchair by this time, and Wendy plied him with more questions.
Where do you live now?
With the Lost Boys.
Who are they?
Oh, well, they are the children who fell out of their perambulators when the nurse is looking the other way. If they're not claimed within 7 days, they're sent off far away to Neverland. I'm captain.
What fun it must be.
Yes, but we are rather lonely.
Are none of the others girls?
Oh, no. Girls, you know, are much too clever to fall out of their prams.
I think it is perfectly lovely the way you talk about girls. John there just despises us. You are so kind. So, you may give me a kiss.
For the moment, she had forgotten his ignorance about kisses and was surprised when he said bitterly,
I thought you'd want it back.
He tried to push the thimble into her hand and she shook her head.
Oh dear, I don't mean a kiss. I mean a thimble. It's like this.
She kissed him.
How funny. Now shall I give you a thimble?
If you wish to.
And so Peter leaned in and thimbled her, and she screeched in alarm.
It was exactly as if someone were pulling my hair.
That must have been Tink. I never knew her to be so naughty before.
And indeed, Tink was darting about again, using very offensive language.
She says she'll do that to you, Wendy, every time I try to give you a thimble.
But why?
Why, Tink?
Again, there was an angry clanging of the tiny bells and rude language, and Peter could not understand. But poor Wendy did, and Wendy was just slightly disappointed when he admitted that he came to the nursery window not to see her, but to listen to stories.
How perfectly awful.
Oh, Wendy, your mother was telling such a lovely story the other day about the prince who couldn't find the lady who wore the glass slipper.
Peter, that was Cinderella. He found her and they lived happily ever after.
Peter was so glad he rose from the floor where they had been sitting and hurried to the window. Wendy cried out to him in dismay.
But where are you going?
To tell the other boys, of course.
Oh, please don't go, Peter. I know many stories. Oh, the stories I could tell you and the boys.
Wendy, do come with me and tell the other boys. Please, please, please.
Of course, she was quite pleased to be asked, but she responded regretfully.
Oh, dear, but I can't. Think of Mother and Father. Besides, I can't fly.
I'll teach you. Wendy, there are mermaids, and oh, Wendy, how we would all respect you, and oh, you could tuck us in at night, and don our clothes for us, and make pockets for us. None of us has any pockets.
She was helpless to resist, and she cried out,
Of course, it's awfully fascinating. Peter, would you teach John and Michael to fly too?
And she ran to John and Michael and shook them.
Wake up! Peter Pan has come, and he is to teach us to fly.
John rubbed his eyes.
Then I shall get up. Hello, I am up.
By this time, Michael was also up, and he asked with great curiosity.
I say, Peter, can you really fly?
Instead of troubling to answer, Peter flew around the room, and John and Michael gave enormous cheers and applause.
Hooray! Oh,
fabulous!
It looked delightfully easy, and they tried it first from the floor and then from the beds, but strangely, they always went down instead of up. John, always the practical one, rubbed a sore knee and asked,
"How do you fly, Peter?"
"You just think wonderful, lovely thoughts, and they lift you up in the air."
"I've got it now, Wendy!"
cried John. But soon he found he had not. Not one of them could fly an inch. Of course, Peter had been trifling with them, for no one can fly unless the fairy dust has been blown on them. He blew a pinch of the sparkling dust on each of them, then instructed them,
"Now just wiggle your shoulders this way and let go!"
They were all on their beds, and Michael let go first. He did not quite mean to let go, but he did, and immediately he was in the air.
"I flewed!"
he screamed, while still in midair.
"I flewed, I flewed, I flewed! Wendy, look! I flewed!"
John and Wendy both let go and joined their brother in the air, expressing sentiments of joy and delight.
"Oh, jolly good, lovely!"
The children were not nearly as elegant as Peter. They could not help kicking a little, and their heads bobbed against the ceiling. Up and down they went, round and round.
"I say, could we fly out there?"
asked John, and Peter smiled smugly. That was his goal all along. Michael, too, was ready. He wanted to see how long it took him to fly a billion miles. But Wendy hesitated.
"Mermaids,"
Peter reminded her.
"And there are pirates."
"Pirates? Let us go at once!"
And it was just at this moment that Mr. and Mrs. Darling were walking arm in arm toward their home, just in time to see four shadows highlighted against the bright light of the moon. And Nana, out in the yard, barked and barked in distress. Mrs. Darling trembled as she and Mr. Darling hurried up the stairs to the nursery, and Nana followed. Alas, they were too late. There was nothing that could be done. Although I do solemnly promise you, dear listener, that all will come out right in the end. Mr. and Mrs. Darling and Nana rushed into the nursery too late. It would be quite a long time before they saw the Darling children again.
P-TAC's audio drama series is a production by the Phoenix Theater and Arts Company. This week's episode, Peter Pan, Part 1, was written by J.M. Barrie and was adapted, directed, and edited by Gina Stanton. This episode features the vocal talents of Judy Brewster as the narrator, Mike Stanton as Mr. Darling, Amanda Booth as Mrs. Darling, Jenna Isabella as Wendy, Ryan Snanuj as Peter Pan, Emma Burke-Kovitz as John, and John Isabella as Michael. Original P-TAC music by Brian Sanishin. For a full listing of credits, visit us at phoenixtheaterartsco.com. That's theater with an R-E. While you're there, please consider clicking the donate link. That would be delightful. Have comments or questions? Email us at phoenixtheaterartsco@gmail.com. Or find us on social media. A very special thank you to our Patreon subscribers, with a shout-out to those sitting in the box seats, Ken Shelby and Diane Stanton. We couldn't do this without you. Join us next time for Peter Pan, Part 2.